in the planet, for the recovery of the planet.
La conciencia que hay en el mundo,
the awareness in the world today, it's also expressed in the United States.
And
we need a large humane alliance between the U.S. people and the peoples of the world, respecting our diversity, cultural diversity, our different ways to see the world.
Y estableciendo una relación
and establishing
de igualdad.
A es relationship of equality. That's the main message. And this has been the message of President Chavez a year ago.
Venezuelan Foreign Minister Nicolás Maduro Moros, thank you very much for joining us. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Sharifa Gokadu, Sarah Matea, Angelique Kamet, Jeffrey Hagerman, Steve Martinez, Ricardo Lobo, Nicole Salazar. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
And you're listening to radio station WUSB, Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock. I can't find Concert Billboard, so that means it's time for Off the Wall. And even though we have an extra 2 minutes this show, I figured I'd get started with both feet running and jump into something else. I just got back yesterday from being in Austria and Italy. A lot to talk about as far as what happened over there and all the fun I had and all the new experiences and that kind of thing. And of course, we want to take phone calls. The big question today is, should we be talking about Blackwater or Britney Spears? It's all up to you. So we'll focus on the issues of the day, as we always do here on Off the Wall, except when we're away and we're on tape or CD, as it were. But rather than have our theme music here, I want to play you something that I recorded off Italian radio when I was in Pisa. There may be a bit of static, but this is what one radio station sounded like over there. And if anyone can translate any of the words.
Acqua naturale.
Like the kind I just spoke over. Send us email, otw@2600.com. Let us know what they're saying.
Diet, Il tuo sogno è il tuo destino, il cammino di Gigi D'Agostino.
And it pretty much goes on like that for quite a while. It was one of the more interesting radio stations I was able to tune into. That's one of the advantages of traveling by yourself, that you can sort of sit in a room for a couple of hours just tuning the portable radio that you brought with you and discovering things without people wanting to know what you're doing. And I've sort of made a tradition whenever I go to a foreign country to take my MP3 player, which has a radio built into it, and record. And sometimes you hear the most interesting things. This might actually be a pirate radio station. This was 98.6 in Pisa, Italy. And they just they didn't have as polished a sound as the other radio stations, which is why I thought maybe this would be something spontaneous. And of course, I use the term pirate radio loosely because we know who the real pirates are. And you heard that little gap there. That's another thing that told me this. Maybe this is a pirate. You know, when you're playing tracks on your MP3 player, how they can never quite get it right, where it segs from one to the other, and there's always this little gap in between. It's very, very annoying. And people have told me, hey, there's a new version of iTunes that fixes that, but they never quite get it right. They either fade out too soon, or they fade in too early, or they try to seg them together in a way that it was never meant to be. Yeah, and they just did it again. That must have been a short track or something. Either that or some kind of a glitch in the machinery. But that told me that maybe this is not as professional and polished an operation as the other stations, and therefore, maybe this one is a whole lot more fun to listen to. Well, it's certainly true in this country. The non-commercial radio stations are definitely so much more fun.
Forse no, e sveglia, mi guarda, non so. Giorno dove della terra odor di grano, sale da giù verso me. E la vita nel tuo petto batte piano, respiro la nebbia, penso a te.
But this is not a music show, so we're not going to be playing music for the entire hour. This is just a demonstration of some of the fun that you can have when traveling, and this is not the kind of thing you see in the guidebooks. So anyway, it's good to be back in this country. I got back yesterday, and trying to keep the spirit, you know, by constantly listening to the Italian radio that recorded. Maybe that's one way to keep the spirit. But I kind of doubt it. I already feel it sort of ebbing out of me. And for those of you who have never traveled overseas, maybe you don't know what that's like. But there's a certain kind of a mood, a sensation you get when you're just walking along foreign streets that have been there for centuries and talking to people that you've never met before and may never see again. And just feeling like you belong in a very, very strange place. It's an amazing feeling, and one that I hope everybody listening is able to feel at some point, able to appreciate. I've done it so many times before, but this particular trip, this is the third trip I've taken this summer. It's insane, and it's not the last one either. Well, I guess it is, because summer's over, but I'll be heading to Brazil in a few weeks, just for about 10 days. That was quite a summer. First, the Chaos Communications Camp, then the conference over there in Malaysia, the Hack in the Box conference, and now this, kind of a double whammy with the Paraflows conference run by the Monochrome Collective in Vienna, and the 10th annual Hacker Meeting. It's kind of a generic name, but that's what they call it, which took place in Pisa, Italy. They've been having get-togethers for 10 years now, every year in a different part of Italy. And I have to say, coming to this for the first time, despite the warnings, and yes, I was warned by people, the Italians are different. They're kind of like anarchists, and they're very political in their views, and they nobody knows what they're going to do next. And plus, they're always speaking Italian, so you never know what they're saying. I got warnings like that, and when people warn me not to do things, that's usually when I decide that I'm going to do it. That's why I went to Barcelona a few years ago, because someone told me, "Don't go there, you'll get robbed." Oh, I have to see it, because I know people are not like that, not there. All right, maybe I wouldn't go to Baghdad.
Di Gigi D'Agostino.
Maybe I wouldn't go to Baghdad, not quite yet, but that's for a whole lot of other reasons. Okay, at some point I'm going to have to turn this down. It's just very addictive. This is where they give out the SMS phone number to, I believe, make requests. At least that's what I think they're doing.
SMS. La dedica. Un pensiero. La dedica. Un pensiero. Al numero 3 3 3 6 4 6 7 6 6 2.
All right, we really have to bring this to a close. Radio as heard in Pisa, Italy, and all sorts of other things that I taped along the way, which hopefully I'll be playing over weeks, months, years to come. Went to 4 countries in 2 weeks, although that's kind of cheating because, a couple of them are really tiny countries. I went to Austria, Italy, and then, of course, San Marino and Vatican City. Both of which are about the size... Well, I say that a lot. I say they're about the size of the Stony Brook campus, but... Okay, they're a little bit bigger than that. But you know, San Marino has something like 30,000 people, and I think the Stone River campus has close to that if you count the professors and bus drivers and people cleaning up the hazardous waste and all the others.
Lento, violento, lento, violento. Lento, violento.
Oh, I have to just go cold turkey on this. I'm sorry, it's just too addictive, and I'll just wind up sitting here with a big grin on my face for the next hour listening to it. Okay, welcome back to me, I guess, Emmanuel here on Off the Wall. And it's been a while. It's been a couple of weeks at least, not since September 11th when we did our last phone-in show. And we're going to take calls today at 631-632-9872. But here's the thing, folks, you got to call in before the show is over. That's the problem. We do have this problem a lot, actually. People call in after the show is over because they're not listening to it live. They're listening to it later. And then they call up at 3 in the morning wanting to be on the air. And then we have to try to explain to them why it doesn't work that way. We can't bend the space-time continuum. We can do a lot of things here. We can't do that. I can't do that. Oh, maybe there are some people here that can do that, but I can't do that. I know we have a pretty good physics department at this campus. And okay, and the other rule, as I see the phone lines lighting up, is that you don't call in until we actually are taking phone calls, because otherwise, you're just going to be very disappointed and sad. Yeah, and your phone's just going to keep ringing, or our phone's going to keep ringing. You'd be wasting your time. So, what can I say? I had never been to Rome before, and that was quite a turning point for me, because I mean, it's Rome, for God's sake. You know, the history of the place is just simply incredible. You just walk down a street, turn a corner, and all of a sudden, there's the Colosseum. You can take the train, take it to the metro stop of Colosseo, and there it is. And I can't really adequately describe the emotion you feel when you just come up out of the ground and onto the street, and you see that. You see that incredible structure. And you see so many other incredible structures that have been there for so long. So much history has passed through their walls, the streets. And somehow, despite all the pollution, despite all the development and urbanization, somehow a remarkable part of that is preserved. And certainly the spirit is preserved. People have this reverence for so many things over there. And you just can't help but be drawn into it. You just can't help it but feel like, wow, this is meaningful. This really matters. And my God, I'm going to go home and see cities that have only been around for 100 or so years. And it's just not the same. It's obviously not the same. But it was really cool. And the best thing, this is what I suggest to people who go over to foreign countries for the first time. First thing I suggest is stop making excuses and just do it, all right? Just do it already. Just get over there, figure out a way. It's not expensive. I mean, yeah, it costs something, but it's not. You can get over there for fairly cheap if you plan it right, if you do enough searching on the internet. And then once you get over there, you can live really cheaply, too. You can find places to stay that cost not that much. I mean, obviously, it's going to cost something. You can't do these things for nothing. But if you hang out in these cities, or you go to events that pique your interest, you meet people, and then you have places to stay in the future, and it costs a whole lot less. There's nothing better than feeling like you're actually living in a city. Whenever I go to some place that I haven't been before, I usually arrive by train, because I just prefer coming into a city that way. And in Europe, that's the best way to approach a city, because there's almost always this big train station in the center of town. And you get out of the station, and there you are. You're in the center of the city, and there's usually places to stay right around the station part of town. But you learn where things are. You walk around, you figure out how the trains work. You figure out if you're going someplace in a couple of days, where exactly you have to go, what time it leaves, how it all works. And then you simply keep exploring all around that area and expand as much as possible. Before you know it, you actually fit in. You actually belong. You're giving other people directions. I was having people coming up to me who were speaking Italian wanting to know how to get places. That was a little bit too much. I couldn't handle that. But when you move with a certain purposefulness, you know, you're not going around in circles and staring up and looking at a map all the time. You know where things are. You know where the street goes. You know how to get certain things. For instance, I wanted a bottle of water. And there was this little store next to where I was staying, and I walked in. How much is a bottle of water? I had no idea, and found out it was a euro. It wasn't hard to figure that out. But that meant the future trips I made to that store, and there were many, all I would do was grab a bottle of water, smack a euro down on the table, say grazie or whatever, and walk out. Just like that, just like a native. Little things. The little things really add up and make you feel like, wow, I actually am living here. Not just a tourist. Doesn't take much, I know. So that's what I suggest. And always when you go someplace foreign, go other places as well. Come back to that first place, because then you feel like you're coming back to a familiar location, even though you're still away. And that's a really cool thing. Very first time I went overseas, I started in London. And that's where I came back to after I wandered around for 6 weeks in various countries. And it just felt very familiar when I got back there. And that's just one of many many little things that you can do to make your stay more pleasant. Of course, if you want to spend money, you can spend a fortune. I was looking at prices for hotels in Rome for the few days I stayed there, and there was something like 300 euros a night. I mean, if you really want to, you can do it. Or you can find places for 50 euros a night. And they're really not so bad. Yeah, you'll have to deal with inconveniences. And this is something I know a lot of people can't handle. I don't know why, but we're very particular about what we get and how things should be presented to us. Where I'm just happy to have a place to sleep and a roof over my head. I really am. I mean, it's not that much. But yet people seem to want a whole lot more. They want satellite television, they want particular types of cushions, they want all sorts of hot water and conveniences like that. You know, I've been in so many places where you open the door and it's a big surprise. This last trip I was in a room that had a phone, but the phone didn't work, and when I asked, can the phone be fixed, the answer was no. That phone has never worked, and it probably never will. I didn't pursue it. What's the point? And it's kind of cool to live without a phone for a while. Also, no television set. That's fine. And hot water? Well, sometimes. Sometimes you get hot water. Water pressure? Well, that's another thing. It's called making do. And if you can figure out how to do that, you'll find yourself able to handle so many more situations, both overseas and at home. If you're flexible, you can have a lot more fun, and that's one of the reasons why. Who keeps calling me? I'm on the radio, for God's sake. My goodness. Can you believe people do this? Traveling by yourself, you have the ultimate flexibility. You can go where you please. You don't have to wait for somebody to get out of the bathroom and fix their hair or whatever. You can just take off whenever you feel like it, or you can stay put and not do anything. See things on your own terms. Now, of course, it's always nice to be with people as well. But those of us who feel the need to constantly be with people, I think that can be a bit of a handicap. So you might want to figure out ways to get out more on your own and not feel bad about it. I mean, it's weird because in this country, I feel very self-conscious if I go into a restaurant by myself. But over there, I don't have a choice. If I'm not traveling with somebody, I have to eat, right? So I have to go someplace. And yes, you do get discriminated against. I went to a place in Rome. And I can understand why. There are no tables for one. Basically, it's a table for two. And one seat isn't being sat in. And that means they're not making money off that. But eventually, they put you someplace. Sometimes you have to sit with a stranger. That's okay, too. It's just kind of an interesting experience. The important thing is the food is really, really good at the places you find. Things you remember for the rest of your life. you heard the shows that we did from Vienna, both on Off the Hook and Off the Wall, talking about the Monochrome Collective and the Paraflows conference over there. That was really incredible, memorable, inspirational. You will be hearing a show from Italy at some point in the future, probably when I'm in Brazil later in the month. And I guess you'll be hearing a show from Brazil sometime later after that. I'd like to know how people have liked or hated the shows that we've done while away. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. I know we don't give out the email address that often when the show's on tape, so maybe people don't write in as much because they don't hear the email address. But we really would like to know, because it's a real pain in the ass, you know, to walk around with a microphone interviewing people and then having to splice everything together and get it presentable and then having to upload it to the United States so that somebody else can download it, burn it to a CD, and bring it in here. And thank you, Finn, for doing that so many weeks. But I'd like to know if people out there are enjoying it, feeling some kind of, I guess, kinship with the places that we go, because I like to bring people with me when I go places. We went to North Korea, Singapore, Germany, England, all sorts of weird and wacky places this year. And it's just kind of cool not only to do a show by phone like I do on Off the Hook, but to do a show where I'm walking around with a microphone and you can hear the sounds of the street and talk to a lot of the people. Well, you can't talk to them, obviously, but you can hear them talking to you. And it's cool for them, too, to be on the radio in the United States. So, again, we'd like to hear what people have to say about that. So we'll be taking phone calls in a little bit. Any questions on Europe or hacking experience? The hacking event in Pisa was simply incredible. It was one of the most fun experiences I think I've ever had. When I first arrived there, it was kind of strange because I was taken to this place that seemed to be like an abandoned warehouse almost with several different rooms, and it turned out it was a squat. This is a place that was not legally being occupied. And, of course, being an American, when somebody tells you that, this is a squat that you're in right now, and this is where the conference will be held, you kind of feel a little bit of trepidation, like, okay, is this really going to work out? Are the cops going to come with various weapons and implements of destruction and raid the place in the middle of the night? And then you just go sort of hang out and meet people and talk and share experiences, and before you know it, you just feel so completely at home, and you realize that it's a different culture over there. It's a completely different culture. People do occupy buildings, and they stay there for years without being hassled. And in this particular case, we had over 1,000 people showing up over the course of the weekend. And even though I spoke hardly a word of Italian, I don't think I even speak a single word of Italian, it was no trouble at all communicating because most of them spoke English, but even the people that didn't speak English, I was able to communicate with. And it was really, really cool because I gave a talk there at that conference, and I wasn't sure how that was going to go because I didn't know the crowd. I didn't know the people. I had never been there before. Had met them at the Chaos Communications Camp at the Italian Embassy, which we played a little bit of on this show. And that was a really uplifting experience. Multiply that by 10 and you get the experience that happened at the conference. It was just so welcoming and positive. That's incredible because I guess maybe doing radio kind of helps because I was up there in front of a crowd giving a talk and I wasn't sure, am I going to have a lot to tell these people? What am I going to say? Can I fill an hour? And it was the last talk of the night, too, so maybe maybe they were expecting more than an hour. And in the end, it turned out to be 2 hours and 10 minutes, so I was really kind of flabbergasted by that. But it was such a welcoming environment. I had no trouble at all just telling stories and communicating and taking questions and engaging in dialogues. And probably could have gone on for a couple more hours if they hadn't dragged me out of the room. Okay, and now back to the United States, of course. like I said before, I feel it draining out of me already. I really do, because first thing, coming back into the airport, and this always seems to happen at JFK. It never happens at Newark. But yeah, picked out of the crowd like always, and having all my stuff searched and questioned, Who do you write for? What kinds of things do you write? Where were you going? Why did you go there? Blah, blah, blah. The whole thing all over again. I travel all over the place, all over the world, and met by nothing but smiles until I come back here. And then it's all the suspicion starts. Simply unreal. And I'm coming into the country, too. It's not like I'm leaving the country and trying to smuggle something through security. I live here and I come back here, and yet I get the third degree. So it's hard to sort of keep your positive feelings when things like this happen. And, of course, you talk to people. Everyone's in a bad mood. Everyone is kind of grumpy and touchy, and nobody wants to do things. It's sad. It really is. There's something wrong. Something wrong with our culture, the way that we live our lives. Too much pressure. Too many annoyances of the little things. When you live in Italy for a week, you learn how to enjoy life. You learn how to enjoy the people around you. And I don't think I've ever been in a place that I felt such warmth from complete strangers. People are so much more physical over there, so much more genuinely emotional as far as being happy to see you or sad to see you go. And just sharing all kinds of experiences, sharing bottles of wine and all kinds of good food. And just really, really enjoying the moments that we have. And we seem to have forgotten how to do that. If we ever knew how to do that. Did we ever know how to do that? I don't know. All these cultural differences. But I honestly can't think of much that's wrong with the culture over there, because it moved me in so many ways. Maybe it's the history. Maybe because this history is staring them in the face all the time, they feel this certain kinship to the past and to humanity in general. And that just sort of makes you not worry so much about the day-to-day nonsense. All right. enough of that. Speaking of day-to-day nonsense, oh boy, I couldn't believe this. I was cut off most of the time, and it was fine with me. You know, I try to log into the net every now and then, read email, bicker with people back in the States, and see what was going on in the world. And I was able to hear the horrible events going on in Myanmar, or Burma, as some people like to call it, still. And that was something. We can talk about that a little bit later, too. But my God, the New York Mets, what a horrible story. Oh, my goodness. This is one of the most crushing things I think I've ever seen anywhere in any form. So sad. So incredibly sad. And anger-inspiring, too. I mean, here is a team that was in first place since the spring, since the beginning of the season. First place, nonstop. And what happens? The last game of the season, they eliminate themselves because they lost practically every game they played in the last 2 weeks. And I was on the train yesterday coming back out here, and people are reading the New York Post, because I guess that's what people do on the train. Not a single person was reading the New York Times. Everybody was reading the Post. And it's a picture of this kid just bawling his heart out. That poor kid, because he's going to grow up and everybody's going to know him as the kid who was crying on the cover of the New York Post the day the Mets got eliminated in 2007. But as far as tragedies and complete breakdowns of a team, I don't think it gets any worse than that. To be in first place for the entire season, almost every single day, up until the very, very end, and then you blow it. You blow it in the last game. Well, congratulations to Philadelphia. I think they deserve it. The Mets certainly didn't deserve it this year, but wow. And I'm not a sports person. I don't follow sports. I don't even know who's on the teams. But I do follow things like that. You know, sort of the romance of following a team into some kind of victory and feeling that you're a part of it. And then the tragedy of having it all fall apart in front of you. That's sort of what drew me to the Boston Red Sox, just over and over again. Tragedy and defeat, heartbreaking losses. Nothing can compare to this. Nothing can compare to this kind of a collapse. Wow. All right, enough said about that. All right, what else has been going on? Well, of course, we have this story. that was actually happening today. And that, of course, is what's going on with Blackwater. I heard about this while I was, I think in Austria, I heard the first reports of what was going on with the attacks on various Iraqi civilians. An Iraqi police officer was directing traffic at Baghdad's Nusra Square on September 16th, said Blackwater guards became the terrorists on that Sunday afternoon when they opened fire on civilians, an incident the Iraqi government said was unprovoked. The Iraqi government. Remember the Iraqi government? These are the guys that our leaders keep telling us have complete authority over their country. Yeah, they're democratically elected, and we're just there at their request to help make their lives easier. These guys were pissed off beyond belief when this happened, when the Blackwater people opened fire. And it's kind of weird. How many of us knew that Blackwater was an entity over there that basically was like another army? Except it's a band of mercenaries. I mean, seriously, that's what it is. These are people who train anyone who's interested how to use weapons and become a commando. And they are not at all subject to U.S. military law. And you know what? They're not even subject to Iraqi law when they're over there. They're there to protect U.S. civilians, not the military. I think the military can probably protect themselves, but they're there to protect, well, if Bush goes over there, for instance. I think they protect him. Do they actually protect him? They protect all sorts of people, corporate people, political people. And when they perceive a threat, they open fire. And this is not the first time this has happened. But when this did happen, the Iraqi government said, that's it, you guys are done, get out of here. We do not want you around. And we want to prosecute those people. Well, guess what? They're still there. In fact, they basically overrode the Iraqi government's demands and said, no, we're not going to leave. We're staying right here. And what's happened in the past, because things like this have happened in the past, companies simply changed their name. I expected that to happen this time. I expected Blackwater to become White River or something. But no, they just basically stopped for a couple of days and then they just went right back. Do you need any more evidence that this is an occupation of a country and they have no rights whatsoever? Their citizens can be killed at any time and it'll be considered a provocation and we'll believe the people that we're paying for. A 37-year-old Baghdad businessman and a father of four whose youngest son was killed by a Blackwater bullet, whew, said he wanted no monetary compensation, but only for the guards to admit to the truth. Incredible. The police officer and businessman on Monday gave vivid descriptions of the incident to the cable news network, in which a senior Iraqi investigator said 17 people were killed and 24 wounded. Meanwhile, Blackwater USA, who you can find at blackwaterusa.com, along with all their propaganda, they said its employees responded properly to an insurgent attack. The convoy of four Blackwater vehicles drove into the square about a half hour after a bombing prompted another Blackwater team that was guarding a U.S. diplomat to rush from the area and back into the green zone. The police officer said the Blackwater guards seemed nervous as they entered the square, throwing water bottles at the Iraqi police posted there and driving in the wrong direction. He said traffic police halted civilian traffic to clear the way for the Blackwater team. Then he said the guards fired five or six shots in an apparent attempt to scare people away, but one of the rounds struck a car and killed a young man who was sitting next to his mother, who was a doctor. The policeman said he and an undercover Iraqi police officer ran to the car, but they were unable to stop it from rolling forward toward the Blackwater convoy. I wanted to get his mother out, but could not because she was holding her son tight and did not want to let him go. They immediately opened heavy fire at us. Each of their four vehicles opened heavy fire in all directions. They shot and killed everyone in cars facing them and people standing on the street. The shooting lasted about 20 minutes. When it was over, we were looking around, and about 15 cars had been destroyed. The bodies of the killed were strewn on the pavements and road. And according to this witness, no one ever fired at the Blackwater team. They became the terrorists, not attacked by the terrorists. I saw parts of the woman's head flying in front of me, blow up, and then her entire body was charred. What do you expect my reaction to be? Are they protecting the country? No. If I had a weapon, I would have shot at them. And how can any of us feel any differently? It's incredible to see how we quickly become the bad guys. Now, you may say I'm jumping a little too quickly and believing one side over another, but history kind of shows this kind of thing to be supported. For one thing, the initial report of the incident that I just described, where Blackwater guards were accused of killing Iraqi civilians, the initial report by the State Department was written by a Blackwater contractor working in the embassy security detail. A source involved in diplomatic security at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad said a Blackwater contractor, Darren Hanner, drafted the two-page spot report on the letterhead of the Bureau of Diplomatic Security for the embassy's Tactical Operations Center. A highly placed industry source said that Hanner, who was listed on the report as the TOC, Tactical Operations Center, watch officer, was working for Blackwater at the time the report was written. Just after the September 16th incident, he was to rotate out of Iraq this past week. And, of course, the people who were involved in the shooting, they have been rotated out of Iraq as well so that they don't spend any time facing justice. We look back a little further. Blackwater USA employee under investigation in the killing last December of an Iraqi bodyguard in an off-duty confrontation was so drunk after fleeing the shooting that another group of guards took away the loaded pistol he was fumbling with. That's according to a report to a House committee yesterday. The guards, employees of Triple Canopy, another private military contractor, returned the weapon to the Blackwater employee, who smelled of alcohol, and escorted him away from their guard post in the fortified green zone. Shortly afterward, the police detained the man, a 26-year-old firearms technician, whom the report did not name, at the Blackwater camp, but determined he was too intoxicated to be interviewed. Within 36 hours, Blackwater fired the man for possessing a firearm while drunk, and guess what? Arranged with the State Department to fly him back to the United States. So you literally get away with murder when you're with organizations like this. So I tend to believe the people who really have nothing to lose by giving their version of the events. I believe people who say they just want to hear them say, admit responsibility. They don't want any compensation or anything other than that. I think a lot of people are waking up too to the fact that we have these hired guns out there. These mercenaries that are doing this kind of thing. The editorial in the New York Times a few days ago by Paul Krugman. Sometimes it seems that the only way to make sense of the Bush administration is to imagine that it's a vast experiment concocted by mad political scientists who want to see what happens if a nation systematically ignores everything we've learned over the past few centuries about how to make a modern government work. Thus, the administration has abandoned the principle of a professional, non-political civil service, stuffing agencies from FEMA to the Justice Department with unqualified cronies. Tax farming, giving individuals the right to collect taxes in return for a share of the take, went out with the French Revolution. Now the tax farmers are back. And so are mercenaries, whom Machiavelli described as useless and dangerous more than four centuries ago. As far as I can tell, America has never fought a war in which mercenaries made up a large part of the armed force. But in Iraq, they were so central to the effort that, as Peter W. Singer of the Brookings Institution points out in a new report, the private military industry has suffered more losses in Iraq than the rest of the coalition of allied nations combined. And yes, the so-called private security contractors are mercenaries. They're heavily armed. They carry out military missions, but they're private employees who don't answer to military discipline. On the other hand, they don't seem to be accountable to Iraqi or U.S. law either, and they behave accordingly. I guess it's the same when you get a whole bunch of people, you arm them to the teeth and tell them they can do whatever they want. They'll wind up protecting themselves and abusing authority every which way they can. And can't be surprised. Can't be surprised when things like this happen. Okay, what else? I couldn't believe this. This is a whole other story. And this was happening when I was away, too. I didn't get a chance to talk live on the air about this, but the reports of the Jenna 6, these are the people in Louisiana, the six black teenagers who were charged in the beating of a white teenager at Jenna High School in Jenna, Louisiana. Wow. And there was this huge demonstration that took place in that town because of the charges that were filed against these teenagers. Now, don't get me wrong. There is a lot of inequity in the judicial system, a lot. And some of the things that happen in this country to this day are shocking and revolting. The racism that exists in our society is simply, it's something that I think people in the rest of the world just don't understand. They don't understand why it still persists. But economically, socially, politically, it's there on every single level. You see it in the schools, you see it in work, you see it at home. All sorts of attitudes are reinforced. And we all feel it. We all feel it to some degree. We all feel it hammered into our heads, racist beliefs and tendencies. In this particular case, it all started with some kind of incident involving nooses being hung around a tree, which is a horrible, hateful image, and culminated in six black teenagers beating a white teenager unconscious and then being charged with attempted murder and being held in prison or in jail. I'm not sure exactly which. You know, this is an interesting case because obviously there are a lot of inequities, as I mentioned, but there are also other things which aren't being talked about. And I was watching the coverage of this and reading about it in newspapers, and it just seemed like nobody was bringing up some very obvious points here. That yes, while indeed there are all kinds of racial problems in this country, how can you have tens of thousands of people who basically are treating six kids who practically killed another kid as heroes? It doesn't matter what race they are. And how is it that six black kids beating up a white kid, that's not a hate crime? There's also no indication that this white kid that they were beating up had anything to do with the noose incident that happened months earlier. In fact, there's no indication that there is any relationship whatsoever between the two events. So what we have here, we have tens of thousands of people marching on this town in Louisiana saying that, well, because somebody hung a noose around the tree, and they weren't expelled from school or kicked out of the town or whatever it is they wanted to have happen to them, well, then that means that these guys shouldn't be punished at all for what they did. And yes, the punishment was definitely in excess. Charging somebody or holding them for attempted second-degree murder for what's a brutal beating, I think. I don't know. It might be a little bit too much. I got to say, though, if it was a friend of mine or if it was me that it had happened to, I would say attempted second degree murder is quite appropriate for that kind of a thing. I think if you are involved in a savage beating of somebody, you kind of don't get to have 20,000 people marching and chanting your name. You know, it's just that really bothers me. And all this does not at all imply that there aren't gross racial problems all throughout the place. But wow, this was not the right case. This is not the right case for everybody to rally behind. And yet I see every single politician saying, yes, this is horrible. This must be stopped. Not saying a word about the actual violence. And while hateful signs like swastikas and nooses are horrible, and they're hateful, and they're incitements to all kinds of sickness, I still say physical violence is something that we should never tolerate. So I don't know. It seems like nobody's saying that. Are they afraid? You know, if you reverse the colors and you come up with a completely different answer, then you got to ask yourself, well, maybe what I'm saying isn't entirely correct. All right. 631-632-9872. This is the magic time that I was talking about where we go to the phones. And also it's a magic time where I try not to mess up the delay system. But I'm not even going to go into delay unless we get some phone calls. 631-632-9872. Tell us what's on your mind, what's been going on last couple of weeks, and anything else that you have to say as I quietly look for something that lasts exactly the amount of time that I need. Okay, that should work. But we don't have any calls, so I'm not going to go there yet. I'll read a letter, otw@2600.com. We only have about 6 or 7 minutes to take those calls, so please make those phones ring. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. Dear Emmanuel, thanks for the great episodes from the Far East. I like the Korea episode very much. It's good to be reminded that it's mostly normal, hardworking people that live around the globe. We all just try to make it through our day and hopefully try to make the everyday life for ourselves and the ones around us as nice as possible. I always enjoy hearing your views on the current state of affairs in the U.S. as well. Seen from Europe, they seem rather extreme and difficult to understand often. It's nice to hear their other opinions as well. Signed, Adder, 1972, Oslo. Oslo, Norway. Thanks so much for writing in. And Token writes in from London saying, I just thought I'd share another opinion, if somewhat a familiar one, about the London Ring of Steel. I live in the UK, but thankfully I live far enough away from London to be as yet unaffected by the constant surveillance. I'm sorry, you're not from London. I do travel into London occasionally and find the hundreds of cameras you see every hour you walk around the city and the Orwellian-style anti-terrorism posters frightening. You seem convinced that the people in the UK have been converted to the idea that surveillance is the way to go. But from the people I talk to, the general mood seems the opposite. I think generally most would agree that putting so much power into the hands of few and undoubtedly on an insecure system is a big mistake. But from what I gather, there seems to be little organized active opposition to it. I just hope a terrifying future can be avoided where the eye of the government is truly all-seeing. Well, thanks for writing. It's obviously up to the people to make these changes, and they certainly can if they desire to. And that's something I think the people of England need to realize. Okay, we have one call, but I need more than one call because going into delay, it makes me sweat. It really is difficult and a pain. So if more people call in and if that person stays on the line, we will be able to take a couple of calls. 631-632-9872. Dear Emmanuel, I just wanted to let you know that a few weeks ago I emailed Newsday about the pitiful comments sections of their site. I did get a response, albeit an auto reply. I'd be curious to know what their personal reply to you consisted of. Now it's time to complain to my local paper, which is just as bad. Keep up the great work with Off the Wall and Off the Hook, signed Marin. Well, Marin, I actually got a call from the editor of Newsday, who basically had a nice little conversation. This was a few weeks ago. Where he said that they're trying out this technology and they realize there are growing pains and kinks in the whole thing, and they're hoping to have some kind of a free speech base where people can express their opinions. And, you know, the guy seems sincere. He seems to really want to make it work. But these are things we should have learned 10 years ago, how to keep the racism out of it, how to have actually productive conversations, and just not this childishness that fosters hate. All right, we have some phone calls, so here we go into delay, and hopefully I don't mess it up too badly. Let us see.
This is Derek Jeter of the New York Yankees. You're listening to the place where unique sounds begin, 90.1 FM, WUSB, Stony Brook.
And here I am in delay. Of course, I have to wait a couple of seconds to make sure I actually made it into delay, which is always a guess. Okay, I seem to have made it, so 631-632-9872 is our phone number. Let's take our first call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Okay, there you are. Hang on. Our board again is not working properly.
Okay.
Okay, there you are. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say I appreciate the honesty that you just said about those Jenner guys, because I for one thought there was something wrong with me, because the thoughts that you put forward, I think, was exactly how it should have been seen, and I appreciate it. I do appreciate your honesty.
Yeah, well, I mean, I try to look at these situations objectively, and I'm always the first person to get involved in situations where I feel that people are being oppressed or treated unfairly, and this just there are just too many things wrong with this, you know.
And I just want to add that I'm black, so I can, you know, I really understand what is going on in this world. But I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, those kids, if they did beat up the other kids, then they should be accountable for it.
And the fact that that you're African American, I think that means something too, because people tend to think that groups all agree and think monolithically, and it's never like that.
Yeah. Okay, just wanted to say my little piece there.
All right, thanks for calling.
Okay.
And good evening, you're on Off the Wall.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Oh, I wanted to talk about the Gina 6.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I was calling because you had said that that we should turn the situation around in the Gina 6 case, and that you felt that the people that were marching there were marching because the black kids had, that they felt that they should go free. And I think that a lot of people that were marching there were marching because they felt that there hadn't been justice in the situation. Not that they didn't feel that the black kids should be punished for what they had done, mm-hmm. but they felt that there was unequal justice that was being distributed in the case. In the case where the black kid had been beat up by a number of white people, white men and boys, that they only charged one person in that case, and that
right.
person got a misdemeanor. And that's the inequality that people were marching about, not the fact that so many people felt they should go free.
And I completely agree with that sentiment, but I did not see enough people saying, but what they did was wrong, too. That's all I wanted to see. And I saw hardly anybody mentioning that, yeah, you know, six people beating one person into unconsciousness, that's really not the kind of thing we want to stand behind.
Is it possible that the media just didn't point to that? Is it possible that there were people that were out there saying that? Because I saw independent recordings that are on the internet where people were pointing out that it's about justice, that it was about the inequality of the situation. And perhaps it's that the mainstream media just wasn't showing that point of view because they were trying to show a particular point of view themselves.
Well, I mean, I've read a lot of websites on this that are run by supporters of the Six, and the way they're talking to them, you know, we stand behind you, and just making them sound like heroes and not saying anything that would indicate any sort of criticism for the actual actions they took. And I've also listened to what people like Al Sharpton and Hillary Clinton have said, and I don't see any criticism as to, you know, the actual acts that I consider to be really not nice.
Well, I guess, you know, I mean, you're talking about it like they beat the kid into unconsciousness, but what happened in that case was that they beat the kid, and at some point he fell and hit his head. I just had a cousin that the same thing happened to. It wasn't that the boys that beat him up knocked him to unconsciousness. He fell, and unfortunately he hit his head in the wrong way, much more the wrong way than Baxter did.
Is that what he's saying?
Pardon me?
Is that what he's saying? I mean, that's not. I'm not belittling that particular version, but just
he's unconscious.
No, six people beating you up, and then you trip and fall. I kind of hold the six people responsible.
Well, I mean, yeah, I can see what you're saying, but I guess the other point is that what you're not talking about is that you're saying it very one-sided. You're saying, you know, we've got this issue where nobody's saying that these boys should be held responsible, but when you're putting the story out there, for the people that don't know the horse story, you're not putting out there that part of what people were marching about is the fact that a white kid was in the same situation, and all he got charged with was a misdemeanor. That's,
well,
That's the point.
The white kid, I don't think...
I totally agree with you that, right. that, you know, these kids did something and they should be punished for it. I agree.
Yeah, that's really all I'm looking for is just that kind of acknowledgement, and I didn't see that. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for the phone call and for the opinions.
I appreciate your show.
All right, thanks very much.
Take care of yourself.
All right, and unfortunately, we're out of time. Always get into the good conversations right at the end of the show. Well, all right. We'll have to pick this up next week, I guess. OTW@2600.com. That's our phone number. At least, we have lively discussions, and we should continue to try to have lively discussions. Keep the debate going. Keep it interesting. Have a good night.
White, one said with quotation. My name is Finn, and you're listening to Finn's Revolution on WUSB, Stony Brook.